When we say that there is a true epistemological and ontological basis, that basis can be either philosophical or can be scientific. Ontology and epistemology can be supported either philosophically or scientifically. What is the meaning of this sentence? What's the scientific basis for ontological truths? The scientific basis of an ontological truth is that the truths can be demonstrably, verifiably established. That is the scientific basis. Philosophically, I say that ontological truth is philosophically established when you say it is reasonable. A truth is accepted to be true if you can show it is reasonable. That is the reason why Rawls speaks of a reasonable probability. If it is not reasonable, it's not rational. Because philosophically indefensible. It should be at least reasonable. That is why I said the Rawls goes a little deeper. He says pluralism is not merely an attitude of toleration. It's a reasonable attitude. Now, what is that reasonability? We come back again to that very question as to what is rationalism. The same argument which you had with Michael earlier about rationalism and empiricism. Both rationalism is reasonable and empiricism also is reasonable. So, according to me, philosophical truths should be both rationalistically true and also empirically true. Then I would say the reasonability of your proposition is very high. But even if it is not rationalistically provable, even if it is empirically provable, I would say it's reasonable. Now, according to some people, rationalism itself is not defensible. There is no such thing as rationally inescapable. Rationally, you can always have before you alternative possibilities. Philosophically, you can never arrive at a final conclusion. This is also a philosophical view. And it is considered to be at least a reasonable point of view. It is based upon the argument of a fact. There was a very important debate at one time in India. Why do philosophers disagree? All philosophers agree that truth should be established by reason. And all philosophers who are here, they are all ardent supporters of reason. And yet these philosophers fight against each other. And each one says rationally it is not acceptable. To some people, something is obvious, rationally absolutely clear. Some say no, it's not clear at all. So the conclusion is that rationality consists only of reasonableness. And in reasonableness, there are many alternative points of view possible. According to rationalism, pure rationalism, rationally there is only one position possible, not multiple positions, because truth B is one only. Truth is not multiple, truth is one. Therefore, rationally you must be able to see that truth, and it must be conclusive. Now, this debate is even today not resolved. And that is why you only at present advocate only reasonableness. Therefore, even if you propose your proposition philosophically, you can only say it is one of the reasonable propositions. One of the reasonable propositions can be proved or disproved only scientifically. If you establish yourself scientifically, then there can't be two alternative conclusions. Scientifically, you cannot say that magnetism may be converted into electricity or may not be converted into electricity. Either it is convertible or not convertible, and just verify. If you can turn the turbine, which is called magnets, and by turning it, electricity is generated, it is proved. So there are no two alternative points of view. Somebody saying magnetism may be convertible into electricity, somebody says may not be. And both are reasonable. It's not reasonable. Philosophically they are reasonable, but not scientifically. Scientifically it is verifiable, therefore it's only true, one or the other. Now, what Sri Aurobindo says is that the point of view which I am presenting to you is a reasonable point of view. But scientifically, that point of view happens to be verifiable. At a philosophical level, my point of view is a reasonable point of view. But I have also further step that even scientifically, my proposition is true. Therefore, although philosophically my point of view is one of the points of view, scientifically, it is the point of view. This is Sri Aurobindo's position. Therefore, Sri Mother says that you should ultimately aim at establishing your proposition scientifically. This is the whole thrust of Sri Aurobindo's Mother is that truth must be established scientifically. And their whole attempt has been, their whole attitudes towards truth is scientific, not philosophical. But they also say that philosophically also, their truth can be seen. And in philosophical terms, my proposition is one of the reasonable points of view. And I don't quarrel with you if you say, how do you prove it is final proposition? I don't. So not the reasonable proposition. You must have noticed that Mother's very small statement, the science of living is a science, not a philosophy. But she said, we shall put forward in a philosophical language. Why? Because the science of living as yet has not come to be acknowledged scientific. I believe it is scientific, but I have not yet been able to convince you it is scientific. A day might come, and I am trying for that day, when even scientifically I will be able to prove it to be scientifically true. But until I reach that point of view, until I read that point of view, I put you as philosophically. Therefore, even from that point of view, I might say that the propositions that I am making, they fit in perfectly with, in tune with pluralism.
But as you dig deeper and deeper into it, you can see even philosophy is defensible, even scientific is defensible. And that is why this attitude, which is now being presented in this whole system of philosophy, you find all the three trends supported and encouraged. Those who want to move on a scientific line, they are also encouraged to go on a scientific line. Those who want to go on a philosophical line, they are also encouraged to go on a philosophical line. Those who want to encourage it simply because it is fine, even on that basis it is allowed, because ultimately it tolerates and gives you a sense of no conflict. This is how I would like to suggest that this particular experiment is pluralistic, philosophical, and scientific. Alright, so this is would be my conclusion of this dialogue. But ultimately you have to develop it further. See, there is a very important statement which Mother has made. Rationally, there can be no agreements among philosophers.
Even if they say they will get cold.
Philosophically, why? Because every point of view, reason can justify. This is the nature of reason. Reason tends to justify a point of view which you want to hold, not because of rational basis. It's a deeper basis for it. That's why philosophers don't agree. You remember Michael Hand, when we were discussing rationalistic argument for proof of existence of God, he did not agree, but he tolerated it. He said, yes, what you say is all right. And in your last dialogue with him also you can say, I know that you won't agree with me. So what? This is what I hold to be true. Philosophically, you can hold a certain point of view. There can be comprehensive points of view. And philosophically you can support all the comprehensive points of view. They are in conflict with each other. But philosophically, all can be justified. It's a beautiful sentence of Shravindu. By the logic by which you sustain one position, by the same logic you can sustain the other position. It's a very important discovery of rationality. The positive, logical position by which you can defend one, you can defend the other. Exactly the opposite. Such is the condition of, this is now discovered by rational people all over the world. At one time it was not agreed to. But now, they speak only of reasonableness. They don't speak of rationality. They speak of reasonable. Everything is reasonable. It's all right. You can't say that it must be true. There was a time when it was said that rationalistic argument must ultimately conclude it must be true. Conclusion is that rationally you can only say it seems to be probably quite possibly true. If you can show this, fine. But other thing also can be shown to be also like that. Fine. Tolerate each other. You should be only reasonable. And be reasonable, don't fight, don't quarrel. It's reasonable that you may be right, I may be right. I think it is right, you may not think it is right, but doesn't matter. Better shake hands. If you really want a complete truth, the conclusion is only scientifically you can come to the truth. Sri Aurobindo's philosophical standpoint is that scientifically it is true, philosophically it is reasonable, and one of the possible attitudes, and therefore it is at least as good as any other. So why do you oppose it? Take for example a philosophy which states that in this world things occur not by necessity but by chance. It's a comprehensive point of view. All things in the world happen by chance. If you ask a question, a child on a computer goes on typing at random. By chance it can happen that the whole drama of Hamlet can come up. It can happen by chance. Why not? There is no argument by which you can say it cannot happen. Maybe a million times it will not happen, but how can you say it cannot happen at all? Shakespeare himself happened to have died by chance. This is a point of view. What's the answer to this question? Sri Aurobindo's answer is, this is quite possible. He doesn't say it is impossible. But he says, but the same facts I can prove better by another proposition, by saying that everything is not chance. My proposition is at least as correct as the other one. Therefore, chance theory cannot rule out your position. Now, this is a question of structure of the argument. According to a purely rationalistic argument, chance theory is fundamentally wrong. My theory is right, if I'm a pure rationalist. According to Sri Aurobindo's structure of argument, chance theory is possible. But the same facts can be shown better explained if you want to explain. Chance theory says, I don't want to explain at all. So Sri Aurobindo says, my theory is better if you admit that things have to be explained. But as a theory, my theory is as good as the other theory in a philosophical level. Because their theory says, I don't want to explain anything at all. There is no such thing as explanation at all in the world. Everything is chance. So what do you say explanation? I don't understand the word explanation at all. So he says that those people who, however, insist on explanation, for them my theory is better. But scientifically, my theory is inevitable. Philosophically, it is one of the possible ways. The scientific registry.
Now, how does he show scientific thing?
For any scientific proposition to be established as true, we have to demonstrate. This is what demonstration is very important. Demonstration has two aspects. One is the convincing the other and convincing oneself. To demonstrate to oneself, to demonstrate to the other. Complete demonstration means demonstrating oneself and demonstration to the other also. Complete demonstration. But first of all, I must be convinced myself before I can convince you. So first of all, scientific demonstration wants that the scientist in search of the truth, at least he must be himself convinced. Now, when is one convinced? One is convinced when a certain thing happens. This is a scientific demonstration. If a certain thing does not happen, it is not demonstration. If somebody puts a mathematical formula and says that energy is equal to mc squared, it's a formula. It's not simple. Science is when you split an atom, an energy which is released out is exactly equal to the mass of the particle which was bombarded, and you multiply it by square of speed of light. It is seen, it is demonstrated, it happens. So demonstration depends upon a certain thing happening. And that should happen to such an extent that at least I am convinced it has happened. That is the first stage of scientific demonstration. The inquirer must be convinced that an event has occurred. That is to say, he has experienced it. Even if he tries to deny it, for example, am I talking to you really or am I dreaming now? Even in my dream, I happen to talk to you exactly as I'm talking. I'm sure I'm talking to you even now. Philosophically, yes, I can talk to you. Philosophically, may be also true that I'm dreaming. Both propositions are possible. But scientifically, am I really talking to you? How do you prove? I should have the method by which the dream condition can be eliminated. And when that dream condition is eliminated, and still I see that I am talking to you, then I can be sure that I am not dreaming. There must be a method by which a dream condition can be removed. Now, when do you happen to shake off the dream condition? A dream condition can be said to be shaken off if I physically shake you up. It's a method. Physically I shake you up. Physically I bring to you 3-4 things like drinking water, and your thirst is really quenched. I rub my eyes 2, 3, 4 times. When I have followed these methods and still I persist talking to you, it means that I am not dreaming. Apply all the methods by which a certain condition can be removed so as to get this condition, then only I am convinced that really I am talking to you. That you are sitting before me. In that condition I go out and I see your car standing there, because in a dream you could come even without car. But I go out and I say, yes, there is a car standing there. Now, if all these conditions are fulfilled, I am personally convinced that I am talking to you really. This is called first step of scientific demonstration. I must myself be convinced. But I have to, scientific demonstration goes farther. I have to demonstrate to another also. I have to prove to her that I am not dreaming, I am talking. How do I convince her? She may be dreaming also herself at present. So, I have to make sure that she is not dreaming. I have to put conditions under which I can see, look, you are not dreaming. I make you see also what I am seeing. It's a double demonstration. Now your question was, how does Sri Aurobindo say that his propositions are scientific? He says that there are methods by which the truth of which I am speaking can be made to occur. And made to occur when dream conditions are removed. There is no hallucination, no thinking, really happening. Such things, these methods exist. If there are no methods, I have no method of demonstration. There must be methods. Methods by which the two conditions can be compared. And then I must say that in that condition, which I call waking condition, certain things happens. I have around me, for example, just now, nothing to make me very happy. Ordinarily, things are all humdrum. We are sitting, well, fine, I'm happy in that sense. But I don't get ecstatic in that condition because she's sitting or you are sitting. But supposing I do get ecstatic now, and I ask myself, am I quite sane? It is true that if I fall in love with you, I get ecstatic. So I have to find out a method whether I fall in love with you or not. And yet I feel ecstatic. The conditions in which I fall in love are removed in my demonstration. And yet I feel ecstatic. There are methods by which you can demonstrate. Ecstasy happens in a certain condition. It happens to me. I guess I cannot yet prove to her that, look, I am ecstatic. How do I prove to her I am ecstatic? How do I know Chaitanya was ecstatic? Chaitanya says I am ecstatic. How did he prove? His disciples could see his ecstatic because he throws himself on a stone. He's hurt and yet he laughs. He goes to another stone, knowing that he has been struck. He goes to another stone. He's again struck. Blood is bleeding. But he's happy. He dances. It's a joy. Now, by what means can I prove that he is not ecstatic? It's a demonstration. This is called demonstration to somebody else. I may be ecstatic myself. That is not enough. Even you, in your condition, as normal conditions as possible, you do see that this is real ecstasy here. The man is dancing and dancing irresistibly. And normally there is nothing here around to be dancing about. He says that Sri Krishna, here Sri Krishna, Sri Krishna, here Sri Krishna, here.
He's
good.
Sorry for me. Good.
Now, Sri Aurobindo says that the truths of which I am speaking are demonstrable. Both in the sense, in the first sense, and also in the other sense. Now, as far as the other is concerned, Sri Aurobindo and Mother admit, we have not yet reached a point where what we want to say, or what you have said, can be yet fully demonstrated to the world of thought. This is the scientific rigor of Sri Aurobindo and Mother. What we see is demonstrable to great many degrees, at many levels, to some extent shareable, but not as yet. We have noticed the point where Mother says, a day must come where even the most blind will be able to recognize it. Now that demonstrability, Sri Aurobindo and Mother say, we have not yet reached. Therefore, what Sri Aurobindo and the Mother say is scientifically so candid. And therefore, it has its own value of truthfulness. One who says, I have now demonstrated to everybody, and when he has not yet demonstrated, he is not so scientifically candid. But when Sri Aurobindo Mother himself said that what we want to prove is proved to a great extent at many levels. At subjective level, of course, there are many people subjectively who will say that what Sri Aurobindo Mother said is correct, true. I have seen the mother coming to me in my dream and telling me, deal with the people first, then look after the children. It's my subjective experience. I have seen it. I cannot doubt it at all, because it is a fact that I have not thought of the mother night. It's not an afterthought. It is not the repetition of what mother had once told me, which happens in dreams. It has happened. I have really seen her. I have talked. I was in a certain state of agony. In my experience, I found my agony was healed, was bound. She said exactly the same problem which was in my mind at that time, which I had not told anybody at all. She put these questions, answers and said, after 3-4 years, I have seen that that answer is proved physically. After 25 years, I can see that over 25 years, what she has said is has proved to be true. Subjectively, therefore, it demonstrated to me. But I have not demonstrated to you as yet. To some extent, yes, it's demonstrable to you also, because if I tell you the story of my life, then I have demonstrated to that extent to you. So yes, it's true, it has happened. And these facts which I am now telling you have happened, which can be demonstrated physically. And yet, it is not that kind of proof. If I can induce in you the same kind of dream, individually, if the same thing happens to you, the same kind of proof comes to you, then I can say that my proof is still further demonstrable. Even then, that public demonstrability, Sri Aurobindo says, supermind can physically work in the physical consciousness. It's a statement of Sri Aurobindo. Mother said on 14th of March, today, she said, I can say that supermind is working in my physical cortex. She says so. And she says, it is proved to me that it is so. I have my own proofs. I can demonstrate to myself.
This is what Satyam says, it will happen. The samadhi in which mother's body is buried opens up. Suddenly, nobody is digging. And from that tomb, mother's body physically rises. Not as the body of Christ, which so it happened at one time. Some people did notice it. But then what he said, you cannot touch me. He said, you cannot touch this body. It's a different kind of body. But supposing this body you can touch, it doesn't fly away either in the heaven, rising and going over to it. Remains stable. You see her day after day answering your questions, acting as before. Supposing it happens, it will be a public demonstrability. You cannot doubt it. Now, even apart from this kind of demonstrability, if supposing suddenly in the mother's room you find that mother is walking now, she is not risen from here, but you see her physically walking in her room, and her body has become completely now young. And she answers your questions, you meet her, discuss with her. As before, that also is a physical demonstrability. Something has happened. A physical body has appeared on the scene, has not gone through childhood and grown up, gradually trained. You find a physical body completely luminous and wise, fully wise. For Sri Aurobindo mother has said that this is going to happen. And until that happens, I have not demonstrated my proposition. This is the aim of their whole work. The entire work which is being done has one aim. The physical demonstrability of the supramental manifestation in matter. That is why I would say that Sri Aurobindo's statement is a scientific statement, already demonstrated in a many, many levels of argument, many levels of experience, on the basis of which it is I who have had not this physical demonstration, but whatever demonstration I have, I can admit and acknowledge that such a thing is possible. What they are saying is physical. It can happen. To that extent, my demonstrability has reached. The educational philosophy which I am advocating today is based upon this much of certainty in my knowledge. It's not as certain as yet, which a complete scientific demonstrability would bring about. To that extent, I am humble, modest. I can say, well, if you hold a different point of view, I admit, I don't mind. If it fits in with the conditions of pluralism, I can say that my position is pluralistic. At least philosophically is pluralistic, scientifically more pluralistic. Ultimately, it has a possibility of becoming completely pluralistic and yet demonstrable scientifically. Alright, so this is my position in regard to pluralism.